Landeskog goes to work on Parayko. Mikko Rantanen out in front. MacKinnon scores! Top shelf! Colorado with a 2-1 lead.
And Avalanche go on to win last night on the ice. 4-1 the final over the St. Louis Blues. Colorado leads the best of 7-1 game to none. Hurricanes beat the Predators 5-2. They're up 1-0 in that series. The Bruins win in overtime over the Capitals 4-3. That series now tied at a game apiece. More hockey tonight. Flames versus the Canucks. And also the Islanders and the Penguins. Flames-Canucks, that's game one. Islanders-Penguins. Islanders up 1-0. And the Lightning and the Panthers. Panthers trailing one game to none. And the Minnesota Wild against the Las Vegas Golden Knights tonight in Vegas. Minnesota leading that series 1-0. Local sports information. We had golf, baseball, and softball yesterday.
Yeah, golf. We're going to start there with the 1A golf meet in, well, it was in Onega. Frankfurt hosted it, and Osborne finishes in second place as a team as the host school Frankfurt won the team title. And also the Osborne Bulldogs qualifying their full team by that second-place finish. So Brandon Beffert finished second place individually for Osborne. He was four strokes behind the champion Trent Mars of Centralia, who shot a 78 on the day. So it's a look at where Osborne competed there. Dayton Lance finished in sixth place at that 1A regional there. And then Grady Walters, Lance Kayser, they're the ones that round out that top four as far as the team individuals that'll make it to state next week for Osborne. Class 3A regional in Hayes. No Beloit golfers were competing there, but TMP won the title as a team. Smoky Hill course in Hayes, as Phillipsburg's tie sides was the individual champion. And then in 2A at Belleville, Sacred Heart was the team champion. Parker Crowe of Plainville, Cameron Shaw of Sacred Heart, he shot 72 at the top of the standings. And Jackson Pinckney of Smith Center had an 88, and he was the final individual qualifier for the 2A state meet. So Pinckney of Smith Center will be going to Salina next Monday and Tuesday. Those Osborne state qualifiers, by the way, will be competing next Monday and Tuesday in Emporia. Just recently, a recent past, they've changed that to a two-day 36-hole golf tournament to determine a state champion. As long as the weather's all right. If it wouldn't be, then they would go back to the regular 18-hole championship that they used to have there in the state. So all the information can be found at ncsports.com as far as regional golf and how everybody did there. Also, yesterday, softball and baseball for our area teams, and we'll go to softball first in Larned, where the Boyd Letty Trojans, the number 3 seed, winning over 6 seed TMP Marion, 7-1. Got out to a 2-0 lead in the first. They led 5-1 after 4. They did get a little trouble early on in the fourth inning, so Chloe Odell actually had to come in and pitch 3 1/3 of relief, and she struck out 7. Miley Brown led the way with 2 RBI offensively. Again, Boyd winning it 7-1. And they will move on to the semifinals to take on Hoisington Central Plains, who won over Plainville Stockton 15-0 in 4 innings there. So Boyd and Hoisington Central Plains both 17-4 on the season now, and they'll play at 3:30 on Wednesday in that regional semifinal matchup. Also, Sylvan Lucas Lincoln saw their season come to a close at 13-8 yesterday as Ellsworth won 10-1 over the Liddy Mustangs, and then Russell Victoria winning over Larned 17-0. So it's Ellsworth against Russell Victoria in that other semifinal tomorrow at 2 o'clock there in Larned. Also, 3A baseball, the Beloit Trojans got off to a pretty good start there. The 8th seed against the number 1 seed Larned, they led 2-0 and after the first half inning, and then 3-2 at one point. They trailed 5-3 after 4. Had a chance there in the 5th inning with runners at 2nd and 3rd, 2 outs, and that was thwarted with an incredible over-the-shoulder diving catch by the second baseman for Larned there in shallow right field to save 2 runs. It would have tied the game at 5, but instead it stayed 5-3, and then Larned scored 6 in the bottom of the 5th to go up 11-3, scored the final 2 runs in the bottom of the 6th for that 10-run win, and Beloit finishes their season at 2-17 with a tough loss, 13-3 in 6 innings to Larned there yesterday. TMP Marion Lacrosse winning 8-7 over Russell Victoria. That was an 11-inning game, so Larned will meet TMP Lacrosse in the semis tomorrow. Minneapolis finishes Lincoln Sylvan Lucas' season with an 8-1 win there. Lincoln Sylvan Lucas is 5-12 to end the year, and Minneapolis will move on to play Hoisington Central Plains. The 6th seed beat Ellsworth 6-2. Again, those are the matchups there in the semis coming up tomorrow. Minneapolis against Hoisington Central Plains, and Larned versus TMP Lacrosse. You can find all of those brackets and all the scores, if you missed them, are posted at ncksports.com for regional baseball and softball yesterday as well. The Concordia softball team, by the way, will be in action today against Augusta in Pratt at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Republic County softball team to play Bennington in 2-1A at 4 and Ellenwood at Sacred Heart at 4:30. In 2-1A as well today. So that's a look at kind of a slim schedule today for high school sports in the area.
Regional track and field reports we have on Friday starting at 3 o'clock every half hour thereafter. Thanks to our sponsors making that possible this Friday on KD Country 94. KDCountry94.com. Do you know whose birthday it is today, Dusty? It's a very important person in your life.
Today is April 18th.
No, it's May 18th, but that's May, okay.
April Thanks. 18th.
I think you're already in
Sorry,
trouble.
I saw April 18th, and you said very important in my life, and that's my sister and brother-in-law's anniversary. I saw the 18th, and I was like, April.
No.
It's my Aunt Dee's birthday today.
Okay, well, that's great, but that's not that important. There's a bigger name out there. Sorry, no offense to your relatives. There's a big-time person that you're a big fan of that's a pretty good entertainer. He's a pretty big deal. He's the king of country.
Oh, George Strait.
Hey, 69 today. George Strait's birthday. It's nice. Much bigger than all your friends and family. Come on now. That's funny. April 18th.
April. I was like, you
April
said,
18th. Whoa, we got a lot more time for those 8-man games than I thought.
That definitely threw me off. Yeah, because I was like, I saw 18. I'm like, important people in my life. My sister's anniversary is April 18th. No, it's May 18th.
I thought I said birthday. Maybe I didn't say birthday.
You did say birthday, okay. But you said important, and then my brain went to a date that's important, and I saw 18, and I was like, it's April 18th, and then now it's May 18th.
The brain works in crazy ways. George Strait, he's 69 today. Pretty amazing stuff. He sold more than 100 million records worldwide, 13 multi-platinum, 33 platinum, and 38 gold albums. Not songs, albums. Pretty amazing stuff, George Strait. Played a few songs. That he has done over the years earlier today on a classic Country Tuesday. All right, big news last night. KU's been missing out on a few guys that have been recruited heavily by Kentucky and Duke, and Kentucky's won both the recent guys, both point guards. One was a transfer from Georgia who announced that yesterday in Severa Wheeler, but KU might have got the best guy that's available. Remy Martin, remember him when he was a freshman, came to Lawrence and lit up KU like a Christmas tree at 21 points, and they rolled KU that year. It just doesn't happen where KU gets rolled at home, although that did happen this year against Texas. And Remy Martin is a three-time All-Pac-12 performer, averaged 19 points per game each of the last 2 years. He is committed to the Jayhawks. He entered the transfer portal last week in a surprise move shortly after he announced he was pursuing his pro career in the NBA instead of returning to Arizona State. He is still testing the NBA draft waters. He intends to continue with that process. The deadline to withdraw from the draft is July 19th, so that's still 2 months from now. Now, Martin is a coup for KU given recent roster defections. Bryce Thompson, five-star guard, left, and he's now transferring to Oklahoma State. Marcus Garrett, he's pursuing his NBA career. He was a senior but technically could have come back if he wanted to after having a free year of eligibility as a senior. And then Oche Abaji and Jalen Wilson have also entered the NBA draft. They are testing the waters. More than likely, they'll return to Lawrence, but there's no given on that. And then KU had been striking out on a few of these point guards. They did get Joseph Yusefu from Drake, a good transfer who's had a good year at Drake and had a nice NCAA tournament. But this one is pretty big. Remy Martin averaged 15 points, 4 assists per game in his 4 seasons with Arizona State. And as we said, one of his big breakout moments was against KU when he was a freshman, when they upset then number 2 Kansas. I don't want to rain on anybody's parade here, but if you're a KU fan and you're super excited about this, it's good that you're excited. That's cool. But I'm just going to tell you right now, you may be very, very, very disappointed 2 months from now, July 19th. Because people are like, well, he chose Kansas, so that means he's going to Kansas. Like, why would he choose Kansas now? If he was going to go ahead and go to the NBA draft, this means he's going to withdraw from the NBA draft. That doesn't mean that at all. It's called hedging his bet, man. It's called, I've got something lined up with a top 10 institution, a blue blood, a place I would love to play. I've got that basis covered now. I don't have to, because I'm going to tell you something, scholarships do run out. Spots run out, especially all the transfers and all the portal changing and everything else. And it's made it very tough on incoming our outgoing high school seniors, by the way, going to college. It's not been a good thing, and that's going to be a tough thing for the next 5 years. I've talked to a couple kids that, one in particular, that is an outstanding athlete in the state at a 4A basketball school, and he said it really hurt. All of these free years of eligibility, then the transfer portal, because think about it. If you're KU, would you rather get a high school, highly touted point guard, or would you rather get a four-year starter at Arizona State and bring him in, an all-conference performer? Yeah. Why wouldn't you? Yeah. You would. But here's the thing. Kansas has him so that if he does decide to withdraw from the NBA draft, Kansas will have Remy Martin as their starting point guard, and it's a great pickup. But there's a gigantic if. There is so much that takes place between now and July 19th. There's combines, there's workouts, and everything else. And if Remy Martin knows he would go in the first round, why come back to Kansas and risk anything, all right? So come back to Kansas. He hadn't even been there yet. But, it's a great sign for Kansas. If you're Kansas, you hope he's really good but not too good so he doesn't stay in the draft. But I'm just telling you, I'm not trying to play Debbie Downer here. I'm not trying to rain on the parade, but I'm just trying to prepare you for the possibility. I'm not saying he's going to withdraw from the draft. I'm not saying he's going to stay in the draft. I have no idea. Flip a coin. I don't know. I mean, if he has one guy that he trusts that tells him he's a first-round pick, he's probably not going to Kansas. But Kansas fans, like, overreacted, I thought, last night because they're so excited. And I get it. Mm-hmm. I do. I get it. And there's reason to be excited. Well, man, he lit us up when he was a freshman. But here's the thing. He doesn't have to play at KU at all. And as he put it, he's got both his bases covered now. So he has now, the next 2 months, he doesn't have to worry about deciding where he's going to play college ball at. And that's something that when I've talked to high school seniors, and I'm sure it's the same way for now all these transfers, is that you get heavily recruited, again, when you're transferring, if you're a good athlete and a good player. You get it when you're a high school senior. And one of the biggest reliefs, if you talk to anybody even from our area, one of the biggest things that they will say once they've decided where they're going to go to school, where they're going to play ball, you know, one of the first things they say, it is a huge relief that's over. Mm-hmm. I've made my decision. It's a huge relief that's over. Remy Martin didn't have to spend a lot of time. Well, he knew before he announced last week going to the NBA draft that he was going to do that. He probably knew that for who knows how long. Mm-hmm. But he also is smart enough, and this is really smart, to go ahead and say, I am transferring. I know I'm not going to finish Arizona State. So if I withdraw from the draft, I'm going to play somewhere else for college basketball my final year. And if I end up going to the draft and I stay in the draft, then, hey, that's fine too. And so to me, he's hedged his bet. He's grabbed a spot on a blue blood, the University of Kansas. He would be the starting point guard. He's got that job right now if he wants it. And now it's just a matter of if he's going to be a starting point guard for a top 10 or top 5 team next year, or if he's going to play in the NBA. So the kid's smart. And he also knew him. He had a few teams that he'd narrowed it down to already. He had been in school. He had been at Lawrence and Allen Fieldhouse. Probably helped that he's undefeated at Allen Fieldhouse. Want to know when he played so well. So he is doing a very smart thing. He got a spot while it was available very early, not early in the process, but as soon as he could after he announced he was transferring. But now he can play it either way. It's a brilliant move by Remy Martin. Brilliant. Because what happens if he waits to July 19th? Would there still be a spot on a college roster? Yeah, somehow there would be. But there wouldn't be as many options possibly because guys getting locked in, this and that. And so I think it's brilliant by him. Now, I think for Kansas, it's a bit risky. And this is where KU fans may not understand this, but I think it is a little bit risky, is because Kansas now believes they've got their point guard situation taken care of, right?
Yeah.
And granted, Yosefu can play point too. So maybe they're like, listen, we felt pretty good before Remy Martin. Now we've got him, so we're just rolling the dice. And if he ends up withdrawing from the draft, then we got a major, major steal. And KU is not going to impact them very much. So maybe it's not a roll of the dice. But if Kansas now, if there's all other transfer point guards that are out there that aren't really going to go to the NBA draft, that are less likely to stay in the draft as Remy Martin, and I don't know who's out there, but if somebody else pops up like Remy Martin or others that KU's looked at, and now KU says, listen, we've already got our spots all filled up here. Remy Martin, we believe, is coming. We got Yosefu. And then Remy Martin, July 19th, all of a sudden his stock goes way up, and he stays in the draft. Kansas may miss out on some other guys during the next 2 months that could have filled a spot that Remy Martin is holding temporarily until he decides whether or not he's going to stay in the draft or not. So that's the bit. That's the little bit of the risk. Now, Kansas has enough talent. They'll probably still be fine if Remy Martin doesn't play. I think it is a bit of, I wouldn't say icing on the cake, but I would say it's a little bit of dessert that Remy Martin is deciding to go to Kansas if he withdraws from the draft. But KU fans need to understand, just because he said, I'm transferring and I'm going to Kansas, does not mean he's going to play one single possession at the University of Kansas. And I would be willing to bet you it's probably 50-50. I haven't read up on all the draft stock stuff, but there's plenty of time to move up or move down. He could get hurt in a workout, and then boom, it's automatic. He's going to Kansas. He could have great workouts, and all it takes is one team. It really doesn't even take one team. It takes one person to tell Remy Martin that he trusts, dude, you're a first-round pick. You're crazy to go to Kansas or wherever. Take your money. Guaranteed contract. So I'm just telling KU fans, be excited, but you might have some cautious optimism. The time to be really excited is the day he says he's withdrawn from the NBA draft, and that could be as late as July 19th.
Yeah, I mean, you got to wait it out on all these guys, and especially a guy that's that talented. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, 19 points a game, two-time first-team All-Pac-12. I think there's probably some interest from some teams there. It just depends on how high they're willing to go,
and
where they're willing to pick him. So that's why you go through the process. That's why everybody goes through the process. There's so many guys that are going through the process that you know are probably not staying in the draft, right? And so everybody's got to take that chance. So you got to weed it out and then see where you're at. And yeah, there's no guarantees at all that he'll be in Lawrence. That's what I would call it. I mean, on anything like that, when you get a transfer that's still in the process, is cautious optimism, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're excited that you get a guy like that, but and I think that's in the case in recruiting in general, right? You get commitments, and you have to be cautiously optimistic about everybody until they sign on a dotted line for a letter of intent out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
For this, it's until they enroll in college at Kansas as a transfer. So that's always the case when you're talking about recruits and then new players coming to your place. It means nothing until they're on campus, in the gym, on the football field, whatever sport it is, practicing with your team and actually on the roster.
Right.
So, you know, those are just some of the things that you look at when you're talking about recruiting. But, yeah, I obviously it's a big get if he ends up in Lawrence. There's no question about that.
I'm looking through here to see where he'd be projected. I'm not really seeing anything right off the bat here. Let's see here. Talking about Remy Martin, projected draft range, second round to undrafted, which would be good for KU. Pros of his game, he's a decent scorer off the dribble, decent shooter, prolific scorer, decent playmaker, solid athlete. Cons, inconsistent shooter, can struggle to score in traffic, can be prone to hoisting up questionable shots, can be careless on offense, which can lead to turnovers, struggles to guard taller players. He's only 6 foot tall, undersized at the point. Summary, Remy Martin's an athletic, skilled playmaker that can score the basketball in a variety of ways. He can score on strong drives to the hoop. He can also knock down spot-up threes to space the floor. On the downside, he struggles consistently to make his outside shot, and his lack of size can make it difficult for him to effectively guard those taller players. Right now, he may be a borderline second-round candidate for the draft. So right now, as it looks, odds are he will be playing at the University of Kansas, and that's why probably KU fans are excited last night, maybe overly excited, because they figure he ain't going to get to the first round, and he'd be nuts, and he ain't going to go to the draft if he's a second-round pick. And as of today, probably a reason to be pretty optimistic about that and excited about it. But I always point out that there are guys that stay in the draft, sometimes unrealistically thinking somehow they're going to move up, and they get this word about, hey, this team's really interested in you, and suddenly you're like, man, I'm this close to my NBA dream. Maybe I'll stay in the draft because I might barely get in that first round, and then guys go undrafted completely. It depends a lot on his people around him and who he trusts.
Yeah.
But right now, based on the prognostications, this one that was just updated here recently, he is a projected second-round draft pick at best, which means he would be really, really silly not to go to Kansas and play basketball this upcoming year, which means then if that's all true and that's the way it stays and he uses common sense, if he's a second-round pick, that Kansas has got quite a steal, at least on paper.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. An experienced point guard of that magnitude, I mean, yeah. And KU was able to get him. So Kentucky beats him out for these other guys that are point guards, and then the best one all along. Sometimes it's not the first one you grab. And later on, and all of a sudden, Remy Martin says last week, surprisingly, he's transferring. Boom. Kansas was able to jump on him, and or he jumped on going to Kansas. So it is pretty exciting. You know, you think about Kansas for next year, they are going to be really good again. But I still think they're missing a piece. And that piece is, and I know this sounds kind of funny for KU fans listening out there, you're missing a poor man's Cole Aldrich or Jeff Withey. I mean, this team, in my opinion, Kansas is a poor man's Cole Aldrich or Jeff Withey player away from being a totally big-time national championship contender. Like, Kansas, I think right now, is a team that certainly can compete for the Big 12 title based on how they're constructed, with the transfers they got, so forth and so on. Now, part of that depends on Jalen Wilson and Oche Agbaji if they stay in the draft or come out. And more than like, I think they'd both be crazy to stay in the draft. But if somebody once again says you're a first-round pick, why wouldn't you stay in the draft? I don't think Abaji's even close. I think Jalen Wilson has a better chance of staying in the draft than Agbaji only because I think he has more potential. Mm-hmm. And Agbaji, I don't see how he's going to go to the draft. I think it's all about testing and seeing what he needs to improve on, and that's the way to do it since he was a junior. But really for me, when I look at Kansas, they don't have a shot blocker. As of now, maybe the Curry kid who's 6'9", Juco kid is going to be that shot blocker. Maybe I'm missing somebody, you know, Lightfoot is Lightfoot and he's back for what, his 15th year, which we saw him at Shields. We were in Kansas City. This is a funny story. I'm sorry. I'm going to jump on a tangent here. So we're at Shields running around trying to kill time because there's a traveling basketball tournament we were at. And we had time between games, and my oldest says, well, let's just go to Shields, you know, da-da-da-da-da, and kill some time. Yeah, that's a good idea. So the family and I, we go to Shields, and then all of a sudden I get a text, and my because we let our oldest go with the youngest to do some of the rides or whatever they were doing or bowling. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I and our middle son were running around in other places there at the store. And my oldest son texts and goes, hey, just saw Mitch Lightfoot and his girlfriend. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And then I catch up to him, and I said, so, I mean, did you have the guts to go up to Mitch Lightfoot and ask him for a picture or anything? And my son goes, I'll be honest, Dad. I was more interested in his girlfriend. She was hot. And let me tell you something. Mitch Lightfoot is 6'8", 6'9", and his girlfriend's about 5'2", and came up to his elbow. Yeah, and she was cute. I won't deny that. And my, you know, when your kid's a freshman, you're 14, 15 years old, yeah, you probably notice a little, like us older guys, like, oh, Mitch Lightfoot, that's cool. There's a KU player walking around Shields. Like, man, he's 6'9". Wow, he's tall. And my son's like, he seemed like a nice guy and all, but, man, his girlfriend, wow. He goes, I thought about going up and saying, hey, hi, Mr. Lightfoot, can I have a picture with your girlfriend?
Yeah.
That would have been hilarious if that would have happened and she would have done
you
that.
You just go up there and be like, hey, Mitch, can I get a picture? And he's like, yep. Yeah, no, you stay here.
Right. And you hand him the camera and say, thanks, man. And then you just grab her and pose with her. That would have been hilarious. I don't know if Mitch would have liked it or not, but yeah. So getting back to the point of the size for Kansas, you know, Lightfoot's, you know, he blocks a few shots here and there. He's a role player, and we know that. McCormick's not a shot blocker. He's not very menacing on defense. McCormick should get better. But they're that guy in the middle, when you look at some of Kansas' great teams, they had a big that could change, alter, or block shots. I mean, I look at 2012, you had Jeff Withey. Even Robinson, Thomas Robinson, mm-hmm. could alter shots and pretty athletic. McCormick's not that athletic. I'm trying to think here. 2000. And, when you had Azubuike, although he really wasn't that big a shot blocker, but such a big presence in the paint when KU went to the Final Four and lost to Villanova. You look at 08, you know, you had Sasha Khan. That was a big guy that could alter shots and big. And, of course, in 2000, In eight, you had Cole Aldrich, who was played great off the bench against Tyler Hansbrough in the Final Four game against North Carolina. 2010, Kansas didn't make it the Final Four, but they were the number one seed going in, and then they lost to Northern Iowa. And what made that team so great? They had a great point guard, Sherron Collins, and they had Cole Aldrich inside. And so when you look at Kansas and when they've been really, really good, they have a really good post. Either he's a great defender or he's an outstanding scorer, back-to-the-basket type of guy, and they have a point guard. They have a really good point guard. And I was talking with a friend about this last night. The most important position in football on the field is what?
Quarterback.
What's the most important position in basketball?
I mean, it should be point guard.
It's point guard.
So you can run your team, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
A point guard. And some people out there be like, well, what about the big guys? You know, the big guys. Oh, the big guys are nice. Don't get me wrong. Big guys are nice. But if you don't have a good point guard to set up your offense, that negates your advantage in the post. If you don't have a good point guard to get your offense set in the half court, or can't break pressure, or can't handle a trap, or can't make good decisions when they beat somebody off the dribble, it don't matter how great a big guy you have. But if you have a great point guard, a good to great point guard that can set up your offense, can hit that open shot when he's given opportunity, if he can break down a defense and make good decisions and kick and distribute and set up your bigs, now all of a sudden you got something. You've got something. And in some cases, you've got something without having a great big. And Kansas has had some really, really good teams and didn't have that, you know, super great shot blocker. But Kansas's best teams, when you think back, you know, starting with 08, and then they go even to 10 when they're number one overall seed, and then you go to 12, and then you go even to 18. They had a 7-footer in the paint that was a major presence, whether it was offensively, like Udoka, or defensively, like Withy or Aldrich. And I'm probably leaving out a few guys, too. Well, you can go back. I mean, Greg Ostertag.
Yeah.
You know, you can go back, and even Scott Pollard. I mean, those guys were tough at the rim. And if you could have one of those guys, and you can just be a role player, don't you have to score a ton of points nowadays, because the game has really went towards a three-point shot and drive and kick and everything else, four out, sometimes five out. That's huge. So point guard is even more important probably now than it's ever been before for these teams. And it's kind of like in football. When you look at it in college football and you look at it in pro football in particular, if you have a good or great quarterback, you've got a chance to do special stuff. If you have an average quarterback, you ain't going anywhere. Unless you got an unbelievable defense, you ain't going nowhere. You're not winning a championship. And we saw that many years with the Chiefs. They had a good quarterback, but not a great one. And that held them back in many ways. Same thing in basketball. If you don't have at least a good, if not great, point guard, it is really tough to be a national championship contender. And Kansas last year clearly didn't have a point guard. And they still got second in the conference, but they weren't a serious threat to go that deep in the tournament. We said it all along. Mm-hmm. They had Devon Dotson last year. That team's completely different.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And what'd they do the year before? Devon Dotson, they had, and they had that big, and they were the number one. They would have been the number one overall seed, and the COVID wrecked everything. So if you can find that big, and like I said, it doesn't have to be an offensive threat necessarily. It's nice. But when you can get beat off the dribble and you got a guy to erase things behind you, that makes you so much better defensively. And you can take gambles on the perimeter as a defense. And that's what the Kansas team in 12 did. They were so good defensively. And you talk about how good defensively they were. On the perimeter, they were pretty good. But they weren't great defensively on the perimeter. But they always knew that Withy was back there to erase shots, or even Robinson sometimes. And so they could take some chances and get some steals and get some breakaways and transition buckets. And so Kansas hasn't had that the last few years. I mean, 2 years ago, Udoka, they did have that. And then there was no tournament. This past year, they didn't have it. So if you really want the final, if you really want icing on the cake, assuming Remy Martin stays and will play at Kansas and not go and stay in the draft, if you could find somehow that guy that could alter the game defensively, rebound defense, and if he scores 8 points a game, you're probably cool with it.
Yeah.
And Kansas doesn't have that.
No. Well, and then I just to add a little bit to that, I think part of finding that guy too is being able to keep him on the floor with the evolution of the game.
Yes.
Because right? College game
he's
is really trending
he's toward
be, the NBA.
He's got to be athletic enough
you're
to,
running
to
four,
switch.
Five, some teams are running five guards out there.
Yes.
I mean, some teams you're playing, they might be a forward, but they're a guard, really.
Right.
And so you've got a Jeff Withy
yeah.
and
he
a
would
Cole
have,
Aldrich
that might not
probably
work.
Couldn't play
probably
in today's
not
game like they did back then.
Well, they could play in today's
game.
They could
play what I'm I'm saying is stay on. They're going to these teams are going to figure out a way to bring them out of the paint,
right?
And to try to force them to come outside and open that lane up. Like you said, they spread it out and they run and you know, cut and dish and all this stuff. And it'd be a lot different I feel like, with Ian Aldrich in today's game. And that's why you need a guy like Udoka, right? Like, that actually can move. He's not the most athletic in the world.
But in 2018, the Final Four, I was there to witness it. He was a gigantic liability.
He was,
because they were shooting threes, and he was a 6'9" guy. Out. And I mean, DeSosa came in. He couldn't stay in.
Yeah, I mean,
he didn't move as well as Jeff Withey did. Oh, there's no way. Udoka didn't move nearly as well as Jeff Withey. Jeff Withey was a better – he moved a lot better. Now, Cole Aldrich – I don't think would do very well trying to guard on perimeter. Withey, I think, could have done a little bit. And by the way, Withey was in the NBA for a little while and was able to do that later on in his career. I think what you're saying, and you think about it, like right away when you brought that up and said it in that way, I'm like, okay, well, who was in the national championship game? Well, who won it all? What does Baylor have?
Athletic bigs.
Thank you. And they don't score a lot?
No, and they don't score a lot. 6'5", and he just gets after it.
Yes,
right.
Well,
I mean, they're power forward, what you call Mark Vidal.
Right. But I'm thinking
those other guys are long and athletic.
I'm thinking of the two guys that got in foul trouble, and yet they still had enough because they had 10 fouls to burn.
Yeah.
And they were 6'9", 6'8", 6'10", long wingspans, athletic. And they get garbage buckets. They don't set up anything for him. Thamba's one of them. I forgot the other guy's name.
Isn't it the guy that you can't hardly pronounce his name?
Probably.
Yeah.
But they're both very athletic. They're long. They jump. They rebound. And they could switch and cause problems to where a guard couldn't get off that shot because of their length and wingspan and their jumping ability. And they're quick enough sometimes to switch, at least for a period of time, and then maybe switch back. Those are the type. You need one guy like that, I think, in today's game.
Yeah.
And KU doesn't have that. Now, like right now, I don't think they have that.
No.
And not every team's going to. And in fact, there might only be a handful of teams that does have that. And so if that's the case, Kansas can still win a championship without having that guy. But boy, it'd be so much easier if you had that guy. Like I said, it doesn't have to be a scorer. He could be a guy just like Baylor had. You know, Drew Timmy, he wasn't really defensive menace inside. Now, he was a scorer. He provided a lot of offense, low post presence. That's another way where a big can really help your team. But Baylor, they won the national championship. They have those long, wingspan, big, athletic guys, and they're not going to dominate you in the paint, but they can make it tough. And then you add the fact that they had outstanding scoring guards, makes it even more to where they didn't need the big guys to score.
Yeah.
And then they get garbage buckets and get, you know, the long rebounds where they get the long wingspan and grab a long rebound and you get a second chance opportunity. Kansas needs somebody like that, one guy that can do that. And I don't believe they have that on their roster.
No, not right. Not as it sits right now.
No.
You know, David McCormick's gotten a lot better, but he's not that kind of big.
He's still a liability defensively on the perimeter, as are a lot of bigs, as you accurately pointed out. So, it's kind of interesting.
Because I always used to say that, too. Like, I wanted K-State to have a – I wanted K-State, when they were going and recruiting bigs, to get a Jeff Withey-type player,
right?
We need a rim protector.
Right.
And all the centers they ever got were, like, 6'9".
Mm-hmm.
And they're listed 6'9", so they're not actually 6'9", right?
Right.
Other than J.O., really, who was actually 6'11", 7 foot. I mean, they've really not had those guys that are centers. And I always said that I wanted a guy like Withey. But in today's game, K-State's, first of all, not going to get a guy like that, and they normally don't anyway. And now it's tougher to say you want a guy like that, even Aldrich for sure. Like, those kind of guys just aren't the type of players you need in today's game. I mean, just the way it is. Now, if they work at it, they can be. I'm not saying Cole Aldrich couldn't have worked at his craft and made sure he was ready to go in today's game. I'm not saying, because people can change and evolve their games, obviously, to what they need to do to have success at any certain level, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it is. You've got those athletic guys. It just changes the whole game.
Yeah, and Kansas doesn't have that right now inside. So that's the missing piece, I think, for Kansas. If you could find a guy like that, and maybe they've recruited him, and I'm not aware of it, and I don't put a lot of stock in a guy they recruited until I actually see him play
at
that level. Yeah, absolutely. So it's a great get for Kansas, assuming Remy Martin does play and doesn't stay in the draft. And right now it looks like it's more likely he would stay in college, but like we said, we never know. The Royals are back in action, and when things go bad, things go worse, right?
Mm-hmm.
Danny Duffy is on the IL. I still don't like that. I still like the DL. Mm-hmm. I was used to it for all these years. Call me a fuddy-duddy. I mean, technically, the IL makes more sense, injured list, because disabled list, it's like, are you disabled? I mean, I guess you are disabled if you can't throw a pitch in because you're a pitcher. I guess it made sense, but anyway, he's on the 10-day IL. It used to be, it was 15 was the minimum, mm-hmm. On a DL. Now it's the IL, or the DL, the down low, as I called it. So yes, I was cool once, kids. As I said, was. IL, injured list. Danny Duffy's been the most reliable starter for the Royals. He has a left forearm flexor strain. His ERA is 1.94 in 7 starts, 7th in the Major League Baseball. He struck out 48 and 41 and 2/3. He's anchor of the staff. He's been pretty big when they needed him to pitch well. His last start was his worst of the year, which wasn't bad at all. 4 runs in 6 innings, struck out 8, 2 walks. And they hope, what I read today on Twitter was they're hoping to have him back in 4 weeks. That's not good. That means he's going to miss, 4 weeks. He's going to miss about 5 starts, maybe 6. And it's just the latest in a long list of disappointments for Danny Duffy in his career as a Kansas City Royal. He's had stretches where he's been outstanding, and then something happens. Either he goes into a funk, he gets hurt, and then he comes back, and he's not quite the way he was, or back at there for a while. The Royals jerked him around. They put him in the bullpen, and the next thing you know, he's opening day starter. He's had an odd career, and considering how talented he is, it is kind of perplexing that Danny Duffy hasn't turned into that number one guy for at least a few years, and he really hasn't been. He's had those flashes. So what do the Royals do? Chris Bubich apparently, finally, is going to get his chance tonight. He's going to start his last 2 relief appearances. He's given up just 2 runs and 12 and 2/3. He's a lefty, so lefty for lefty. Duffy goes on the IL. Brad Keller will start coming up tomorrow night. Royals start a series at home at Kauffman Stadium against the Brewers, 7-10 first pitch tonight. For the boys in blue. So Bubich on the hill tonight, and then Keller is on the hill tomorrow, and then the Royals will try to figure out what they're going to do, because they could go to a 4-man rotation until next Tuesday, or they could call up a 5th starter. They could go with Junis or Santana as a spot starter. Right-hander Jackson Coar has been dominant in 3 starts in AAA, ERA of 1.15, 22 strikeouts of 15 and 2/3. His next start is scheduled for Tuesday. So maybe they'd bring him up. I don't know. After what happened with Daniel Lynch, they may be a little bit gun shy to do that. But Bubich is going to take Duffy's spot, and then the Royals will decide what they're going to do working forward from there. But it's a big blow because they're starting pitching. We talked about it oddly enough yesterday, ironically, that this starting rotation has to get better. And if it doesn't, it doesn't matter what the offense does. The bullpen's going to get worn out, and the Royals have no chance of going anywhere and winning this division or getting a wild card. The starting rotation doesn't carry more of the weight. And now the guy that's carried the most weight of all 5 starters is now on the IL and probably out for a month. Somehow, some way, some young guy from the minors is going to have to come up and really do well. Or Brad Keller and Mike Minor and Brady Singer are going to have to start pitching a lot better consistently, because I just don't see where they're going to get this pitching. Especially, I was questions with Duffy in the rotation.
Oh, I know, exactly, yeah.
So what do you do now when he's out?
Get rid of the guy that's been doing it all year so far and just expect that it's going to be okay. maybe Bubich will do fine. You know, maybe he'll come out here and take the opportunity and run with it, right? Like, maybe he feels like he should have been in that rotation. They should have never called Daniel Lynch up. Maybe
the thing is, though, Chris Bubich is, last year when he started, last year, the year before, whatever it was.
It was last year,
He did never went deep in games.
No,
he'd go about 5, 5 1/3. He would rarely ever get through 6.
Yeah.
So, once again, that means your bullpen's going to have to throw 4, 4 1/3 probably.
Yeah.
But that's what the best option they have. That's better than 2 2 2/3 and 2/3 by Daniel Lynch.
Yeah.
Hear about the we talk about odd injuries in sports. Here's another one. It's happened before, though, but this is the latest. The Atlanta Braves will be without right-handed starter Huscar Yanona after he punched the dugout bench and broke his pitching hand following his Sunday start against the Brewers. in which he allowed 5 runs and 4 1/3. He'll be sidelined at least a couple of months, which means he's likely out until after the All-Star break. He's 23 years old. He's a key contributor to the Braves in 44 innings, 8 starts, 1 relief appearance. His ERA is 3.02, 50 strikeouts, just 11 walks, and in 5 of his 8 starts, he's allowed 1 or 0 runs. Okay, so listen, I understand losing your temper, all right? When I was in high school, I lost my temper on the tennis court at times. I broke a racket or two back in my day, okay? Should have just taken it and hit myself upside the head with it. Would have been probably better, more effective. Now, once I gathered my anger issues and my inner demons, per se, because I was fighting myself, obviously, once I got through that after my sophomore year and was able to harness that and handle it and mature, I had a lot more success as a junior year, and then my senior year went really, really well, and I was able to achieve the goals I wanted to achieve and make state tennis and medal and get top 4. And it's like, oh, what a concept. I was able to harness my my temper, and I didn't beat myself. And I don't know if I was 23. I'd like to think, now, if I was 16, I might have been dumb enough to get mad and maybe punch a bench with my tennis serving hand or arm. Maybe I would have. At 23, I think I was smart enough to understand that, especially if I was a really good pitcher, that if I'm going to punch the bench, I'm probably going to use my offhand. I'm probably not going to use my throwing hand. Now, granted, you break your left hand, you may still be out too.
But you can't catch the ball when the catcher throws it back to your right. If you break this hand, you can't put your glove on.
Although there have been guys that have played before.
I'm just using my opposite hand.
Right, sure. Right. There have been guys before that have been like padding and everything else, and they somehow can get through it. The point is, your money arm is your dominant hand, obviously, as a pitcher. And so it just goes to show you that temper many times doesn't work out very well. He punched the dugout bench and broke his pitching hand. And who knows if he'll ever be the same again. You don't know. Yeah. I mean, this could be it for a 23-year-old guy because he lost his cool and was frustrated. Now, better to take it out on a bench instead of a person, obviously. But one of those weird Major League Baseball injuries and a tough break for the Atlanta Braves, figuratively and literally.
Both. For sure. Well, yeah. If he had a lot of games like that he got frustrated with, then it's maybe time for them to find something different anyway. But
he's been really good. 5 of his 8 starts led 1 or 0 runs.
But most of his, he's been good most of the time. So, yeah, that's not smart.
Only 23.
We all have bad days, right? So let's not compound it and make it 2 months worth of bad days.
Right.
Or however long it's going to take to.
Well, my advice to Yonona next time is grab the baseball bat and take out the coolers, but then the bat breaks, not your hand. But anyway, tough lesson to learn right there. The NBA play-in games begin tonight. It is the Pacers and the Hornets. That's the battle of the 9 and 10 in Indiana. The winner of that game will stay alive, and the loser will be done for the season. That's at 5:30 on TNT. And then the second game tonight, the Celtics hosting the Wizards. It'll be Russell Westbrook, Bradley Beal against Jason Tatum. Should be an interesting matchup tonight. If the Celtics, whoever wins that game, will be the 7 seed and will get the Brooklyn Nets in the first round of the playoffs. The loser then will have to play the winner of the Hornet-Pacer matchup to make it in as the 8 seed, and your reward for that would be to play the number 1 seed Philadelphia 76ers. So once again, Wizards, Celtics, winner is in as a 7 seed. Loser, still alive, would have to play one more game to get the 8 seed. The Pacer-Hornet game is an elimination game. You lose, you're done, and then you win, you got to win one more. So if you're Pacers and Hornets, you have to win 2 to get into the playoffs. Wizards, Celtics, 7-8, you've got to win 1. So those are the games today. That's the Eastern Conference. Tomorrow, the Western Conference play-in games, the Spurs and the Grizzlies at 6:30 on ESPN. And then the one a lot of people are excited about, LeBron, Anthony Davis, the Lakers versus the Warriors, 9 o'clock tomorrow night in L.A. on ESPN. Listen, I'm putting my money on the Lakers is what I would do. I love Curry and all, but the Lakers have more firepower. And something that has gone a little bit unnoticed, all the talk about AD being a little bit hurt here and there, and then, of course, LeBron's ankle, is Dennis Schroeder had missed time with injury, too, and now he's back. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy that can score. So I just think the Lakers had too much firepower, even if they're a little bit rusty and they haven't played with each other. I think defensively they will step it up against Curry, and Curry's, I think, going to have a tough night. Like, I think he might still score 30-35, but he's going to have to take a high volume of shots. And if Curry shoots tomorrow night, 12 of 20 with 7 threes, the Lakers are in trouble. But if he goes out tomorrow night and shoots 12 of 28, the Lakers are all right.
Mm-hmm.
And he can still get his 35. And then, but Andrew Wiggins, nice player. You'd think he'd be a lot better, even a lot better than he is. He's had a nice NBA career, scored a lot of points. I'm just not going to – if I have to choose between Andrew Wiggins – I mean, Draymond Green's a good player, but he's not an offensive threat. So where's the offense going to come from for the Warriors? Outside of Curry, that Draymond Green ain't going to bring the offense. So it's got to be – Andrew Wiggins got to be one of the key guys to score.
Yeah, sure.
And if you're putting your money – or not your money, but you're resting on Wiggins versus LeBron and AD, Curry better score 50. I don't like those odds of depending on Wiggins to have a huge game.
No.
If he does, great, but I don't see it happening. So those are the Western Conference games tomorrow. Once again, Lakers, Warriors, winner is a 7. The loser would have to play another game against the winner of the Grizz Spurs. Grizz Spurs is an elimination game. So that's an update on the NBA. Obviously, the most exciting game, or the one everybody's excited about, is the Lakers and the Warriors. Nobody's getting too excited about the Grizzlies Spurs. Nobody's getting too excited about Pacers Hornets. Celtics Wizards is a lot of star power, and I think that's the one I would obviously tune in and watch tonight.
Yeah, I'll have them all on. I don't know if I'll really be watching them.
Right.
I got the two TVs set up, so I usually put one of them on mute that I'm really not all that focused on. I'll probably actually have the Royals and watch them, and then have the NBA just
after a couple innings of the Royals, they're out down 8-2. You'll switch over.
Sure, switch it.
You bet. All right, who are you picking? Pacers, Hornets, and who you cheering for? I'm cheering. That's tough. I like Devonta Graham a lot.
I'm gonna pick the Hornets. I honestly don't care. Doesn't matter to me.
I'll pick the Pacers to win the game. I don't really care. And then Celtics Wizards. I'm gonna cheer for the Wizards. That's a tough game. I mean, you talk about a completely fall flat on your face. The Celtics with the talent they had this year, and I still think Brad Stevens is a great coach, but man, he's had a tough year. The Celtics are the classic underachiever this year. I mean, you talk about a complete way to just fall and end your year. 36-36 after their stretch there, they're playing really well finally. You got a star in Jason Tatum, and the best you can do is lose in a play-in game at home with fans there. They're going to be a lot of booing if they lose this game tonight against a team that started off dreadfully in the Washington Wizards. I'm cheering for the Wizards. I don't know who really truly to pick on it, though.
I'm going to pick the Wizards.
You're picking the Wizards?
Yeah. Again, don't care who wins.
Right. Yeah.
Wizards, fine. I'll cheer for the Wizards.
All right, there you go. Take them. Take the picks to the bank or whatever else you want to do. How's that?
Have no interest when my team's not as good, right? It's like, whatever.
That's how it usually is.
It's just like, the playoffs are coming. Like, do I care? Like,
playoffs? Playoffs? I'm just trying to win a game.
Like I said, yes, it's kind of sad that my team actually has a chance to even, you know, maybe win a couple games. They'll be the 8th seed, right?
Right.
And my team could be there, but I just like, I know who they're playing if they get there. And it's like, it has not been good at all against Utah. So it's just like, Wizards going to win. I don't care.
And people wonder why teams tank in the NBA. That's exactly why. You don't want to be 33-39 and be the 10 seed like the Spurs. You want to be 23-49. And you want to have a lottery pick. You know, it's like the NFL. You know, the worst record in the National Football League to have is what the Dolphins had forever all the time. 8-8, 9-7, 7-9. That's purgatory, baby. Mm-hmm. That's purgatory. You might as well go on down to hell in the NFL. And I don't mean this in a mean way, okay? But in the NFL, you might as well go down like the Chiefs did, 2-14, and work your way back up. Instead of just being 9-7, 8-8 every year, that just means you're in purgatory. You can't quite get to heaven, but you're not going there. But by golly, you got to get there somehow. You know what? Maybe we got to go backwards a few steps and then shoot ourselves back up there. I mean, it's just 8-8 is and the same thing in the NBA. If you're 41-41 when they have a regular season of 82 games, this year it's 72. I mean, that's the worst spot to be. It sounds really weird to say, but like Royals, we're trying to work our way up to be a 500 team and win more than we lose. And that's a good step by step process. So let me take this back for a moment. It's okay 1 year to have that year. Like, if you're an NFL team and you're 4-12 and next year you go 8-8, that's acceptable because it's a step in the right direction. You're showing improvement.
Ascending.
If you're the Royals, yeah, you're ascending. If you're the Royals, you win 72 and then you win 81 and go 81-81, okay, that's a step in the right direction. But then when you stay in that area for a few years, it's just you're better off tanking. And that's like the Thunder. They were 20-27 and on the fringe of the playoffs, and all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute, this doesn't do us any good. And they went out and promptly lost 23 of the next 25. Yeah. Because that's just what and people say, well, you shouldn't tank and that's not good for the game. Listen, if it's allowed, you're I mean, did it not help the Houston Astros? The Houston Astros tanked for 3 years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I would say it worked. They got top flight draft picks. They hit on them, Correa and all kinds of other guys. And what happened? They won one or two World Series. They made it to multiple World Series.
I think they only won one.
They won the one, and then they tried to repeat and lost to the Nationals in 7, and then, of course, the cheating scandal and everything else. But the Astros benefited greatly from tanking. Greatly from tanking. Now, the 76ers, they're the number one seed in the East. They completely tanked on purpose. And they're being rewarded for it. They haven't won a championship. They haven't got to the NBA Finals since they've done it. Remember the trust the process? Mm-hmm. But it really is. It really is. In the NBA, and I get your point totally, it's like, what's our reward? We're 33-39, and we're the Spurs, and we win a couple games, yay, and then we get to play the Jazz, who we're not going to have a chance to beat in the 7-game series. Why not just be bad, and win 23 instead of 33, and not be in the silly play-in tournament, and get ready to hope the ping pong balls drop my way on the lottery, and then maybe I can get the next Tim Duncan like I did one time.
Yeah, I was going to say that the good strategy in the NBA is to have your superstar center get hurt early in the season, David Robinson, and then tank it, whatever, this season's gone, and then end up winning that lottery and get Tim Duncan. That's the strategy, right?
Yeah, right.
Because your superstar center is then back the next year paired with another superstar that's 6'11", and you have Twin Towers. Again, the game's different. You can't do it the same way, probably, but that's what you need to do.
Sometimes you need a little bit of luck.
And ever since the Kawhi trade, it's been like that, right? Mm-hmm. The Spurs are always 7, 8, 9, 10 in that area.
That's not good.
And it's just like, let's just dump it 1 year and not rebuild
good.
It.
Not good. Not good. I know there's a while it seemed like the Chiefs were always 9-7, 10-6. That's not – 10-6 is nice, but that's still – we're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
You know, of course, it didn't matter for the Chiefs. They go 13-3 and then lose at home until – Mr. Mahomes came onto the field for the Chiefs, and things obviously changed. So, yeah, average is really not that good. It sounds so sad to say it. You're better to be well below average than average in order to ascend to be great. That makes no sense in real life, per se, but it does make sense in team sports.
It does.
Yeah. Now, maybe that 1 year you ascend and you make that big, you make a jump. But if you stay there, if there's anybody that knows that, better than anybody, it's my two friends who are both named Todd. One lives in Omaha, one lives in Cocker City, and they're both Dolphin fans. I can't for the life of me explain it and fully understand it, but they all understand the purgatory of the NFL. The Dolphins have been the absolute perfect example of what you don't want to do for so many years. You're good enough not to draft higher in the draft, but you're bad enough to where you don't make the playoffs. You're right there to the last couple of weeks. That's the worst place to be in sports, is right in the middle. That's why I've said for so many times, I'll take the Royals 2 years of the World Series and be bad for 8 years and then get back to where we're great again. I can live with the bad if I know there's the great. I don't want to be in the middle all the time. That's just me, because in the middle means you're probably not winning championships.
Yeah.
You know? Eventually you get tired of, yay, we went 10-6.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
Well, that's what happens in college sports. I mean, remember Bill Snyder and K-State? It was nice when they got third in the conference.
11 wins, 6 out of 7 years.
Right.
You know?
You win 10 games. Well, that's nice. But all of a sudden, guess what? People start wanting more. Mm-hmm. Well, when are we going to win 11? When are we going to compete for the Big 12 title? When are we going to win the Big 12? Oh, wait a minute. When are we going to win the national championship? And the expectations go up because you've built something and you become consistent. You got to this level. And even though that's really better, obviously, than going 8-8 in NFL, but once you get there and you're 8-8, 9-7, then people are like, you know what? This stinks. That's as good as we get. Fire the coach. Well, yeah, but he just took you from 2-14 to 10-6 in 3 years. Yeah, but we've been 9-7, 9-7, 10-6. We need a guy to get us over the hump, right? That's what we need.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, Mark Mangino, 12-1, and then 5-7, and you fire him, and now you're lucky to win a game. So be careful how that all works, right? right? That's why when your team is doing well, you better enjoy the ride.
Oh, absolutely.
We've said it with the Chiefs. We said it with the Royals back in 14 and 15. Don't get caught up in all the nuances of what your team doesn't do right. Focus on the fact that you have one of the best teams in baseball or you have one of the best teams in football. Enjoy the ride because that ride can be short-lived.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.